You're listening to a Times Higher Education podcast.
Hello and welcome to this Times Higher Education podcast special, looking at the results of the 2016 to 2017 THE World University Rankings. These are our 13th annual World University Rankings, and here to discuss the key themes emerging from this year's results are Rankings editor Phil Beatty and Rankings reporter Ellie Bothwell. We will reveal the all-important top 10 in just a moment, and there is a brand new number one in that list too. That's the first time we've had a new number one, I think, in the last 5 years. But before we reveal exactly who it is, Phil, perhaps you'd like to remind us why these rankings are now of such importance to universities.
Well, I think the power of rankings has been driven by probably three key forces. I think one is international student mobility keeps going up and up. 4.5 million international students, you know, studying outside their home country. That's predicted to rise to about 8 million in the next few years. And the rankings are, you know, hugely influential in informing those students' decisions. There's a lot of evidence suggesting that rankings are, you know, one of the most important elements informing student choice. We also have, of course, a sort of geopolitical element. You know, governments are increasingly very conscious of rankings. They're a symbol of a nation's competitiveness, a nation's strength in the knowledge economy. And in many cases, actually, there's a lot of national pride at stake. So there are lots of campaigns driven by governments to rise up rankings, to get their institutions more competitive. And I think increasingly now as well, we're seeing universities themselves taking them more seriously. Of course, they're powerful for marketing universities and establishing their position in terms of a very competitive market for talent, students and faculty. But we're seeing them used actually as a pretty sophisticated strategic management tool. Universities get to decide and understand their performance against benchmarked institutions across the world.
Well, without further ado, with all of that in mind, let's have a quick rundown of the top 10 universities in the world for 2016-2017. At number one, it's the University of Oxford, which takes the top spot this year in the UK, of course. At two is Caltech in the US. At three is Stanford University, also in the US. At four, it's the UK's University of Cambridge. MIT is at five, back in the US again for the next few. Harvard is at six. Princeton is at seven. Imperial College London is at eight. ETH Zurich in Switzerland breaks into the top 10, as it was last year, I should say, number 9. And at joint 10th, it's the University of California, Berkeley, and the University of Chicago. So Oxford is the world's number one university for the first time ever. Ellie, Phil mentioned national pride in his opening remarks there. Has it been a good year for the UK across the board?
So, well, first of all, about Oxford, yeah, it's great news that the UK is the first number one. I mean, Oxford's rise is due to a sort of improvement in its performance across the board. So improvements in teaching, research, its research influence, and also its international outlook. In terms of the UK as a whole, it hasn't seen sort of such improvements all round. There have been a few universities that have fallen out of the top 100. So Sheffield, St Andrews, Queen Mary, and Exeter have all dropped out of the top 100. And this is mainly due to a sort of rise of universities in Asia that are sort of now coming into this kind of more elite group at the top of the rankings. And so it's providing much more kind of global competition.
Yeah, we've ranked, we should say at this point, almost 1,000 universities this year. And you can get the top 100, 200, 300 and the rest of it at www.theWUR.com. We don't have time to read them out here quite in their entirety. But there you can see all the movers and shakers and reference there perhaps to a couple of UK wobbles.
Yeah, I think it's interesting actually that Louise Richardson, the Vice-Chancellor of Oxford, gave us an interview. Of course, Oxford is now at the very pinnacle of the ranking. It's number one, but I think there's a very strong message coming from within Oxford, which is not to get carried away. This does not mean that the UK system is in rude health and it's in a fantastic position. She has said there are serious challenges to future competitiveness. One is, of course, funding. Mm-hmm. She says that the incredibly large endowments, for example, in the US and the major investments by governments in East Asia, particularly China, are hugely challenging. She says Oxford is underfunded given its global status. She's complaining as well, actually, about bureaucracy. She's worried about the overregulation of the sector. She's particularly concerned about the teaching excellence framework, the idea that we might force our universities into uniformity in teaching. And, of course, Brexit. She's concerned about losing talent. She's already reporting problems with grants and already experiencing negative effects with Brexit. So I think the message for the UK is it's wonderful. We've got our first ever world number one, and we've got Imperial and, of course, Cambridge in the top 10 in a really strong performance. We're still the second strongest nation, but there's absolutely no room for complacency, and we can see lower down the list that UK universities are struggling.
Indeed, and you can read plenty from Louise Richardson at timeshighereducation.com about these rankings results. You can search for her name, or indeed follow the rankings coverage on there. But while the UK may have bragging rights at number one and has been urged to keep calm, the US, perhaps, Ellie, shouldn't be too concerned that it's lost that top crown, because elsewhere it's been pretty stable for the United States.
Yeah, the US is, yeah, it's got the same number of universities in the top 200 as last year, 63. And yeah, generally its performance is pretty stable. And what's interesting as well is that in previous years, some of its public universities have really suffered, sort of following big state funding cuts kind of since the global recession. Some of them have kind of fallen down the rankings. What you can see this year is actually a lot of those have sort of stabled out. Mm-hmm. And it seems they're maybe kind of weathering the storm of those cuts and have maybe kind of found a way to sort of manage their budgets. So that's sort of quite optimistic news for the US.
Absolutely. And in terms of other regions, you mentioned when you were sort of giving us an overview at the start that a couple of the UK universities that have dropped out of the top 100 had maybe done so at the expense of some Asian institutions. So looking east, what's the picture like across the Asian continent?
Yeah, so across the continent, there are some really good news sort of for several of the countries really in Asia, particularly the East Asian region. China now has a top 30 representative, Peking University, and also one in the top 40, Tsinghua University, for the first time. And it's got sort of several more universities in the top 100 and top 200 of the rankings. They really are sort of moving up closer to the top of the list. Hong Kong is the most sort of represented Asian region in the top 200. It's got six there. And Singapore is again home to the continent's top university. The National University of Singapore is 24th, which is its highest ever position. But outside of the East Asian region, there are also improvements. So India's flagship, the Indian Institute of Science, is in the 201 to 250 band, which is its highest ever position. So we might expect to see that kind of reaching the top 200 in the next few years.
And Phil, presumably in those East Asian countries that Ellie was discussing, not quite the same pressures on funding that Louise Richardson has described in the UK.
Yeah, I mean, I think if you look at the number one National University of Singapore, you know, any British Vice Chancellor or any European President, I think, would be insanely jealous. They've got the money to bring entire research teams over, build them facilities that don't exist in other parts of the world. China, of course, has had wave after wave of investment since the 1990s, really. The most recent one is the, what do they call it, World Class 2.0. There's another huge injection of tens of billions of dollars. And this is on top of sector-wide funding and steady state. So these excellence initiatives, I think, are the big issue. There's a lot of countries are not just funding their higher education systems, they're funding sort of smaller elite research-led group with the specific intention of driving them up these rankings.
We don't have quite the time here to cover all the regions, but like I say, if you head to thewur.com, you can search by country and have a look at how any nation has performed. But before we go, maybe we should touch on Europe, Ellie, which Phil alluded to there. Seems unfair to group them all together. Obviously, lots of distinct systems, lots of different approaches. But if you could give us a picture of Europe, what would we see?
Yeah, so yeah, it is quite mixed, really. So Germany does really well again this year, as does the Netherlands. So Germany has 22 universities in the top 200. And the Netherlands has 13, and it's the first time that all of the Netherlands sort of research intensive universities have made the top 200. Mm. So that's great news for those countries in particular. Sort of elsewhere, Southern Europe and also Central and Eastern Europe doesn't do so well. So Spain and Italy are both seeing sort of country universities falling out of the top 200, and then there's been quite dramatic falls for the sort of eastern countries like the Czech Republic and Poland and Romania, which I think is largely sort of down to big funding cuts. You know, their universities just aren't nearly as well invested as those in, say, Germany and the Netherlands.
Indeed. Well, you can read detailed analysis of all the world ranking results on our website, either at thewur.com or indeed at timeshighereducation.com. And also we have published a quite huge supplement alongside this year's rankings, nearly 100 pages there of analysis and news about the results. That's distributed in Times Higher Education, of course. Before we go, we should mention one or two developments that are coming up, Phil. We're going to be involved in the launching of a specific US ranking in cooperation with the Wall Street Journal, and that's just on the horizon.
That's right, actually, very, very soon. We haven't officially announced the date yet, but very soon we'll be publishing the first ever Wall Street Journal Times Higher Education US College Ranking. The idea here is actually to recognise that different types of institutional mission should be recognised with different types of rankings. This is a domestic ranking. It allows us to draw down on the kind of data that doesn't exist at a global level. And we're making this US ranking very, very much focused on students and the teaching environment. So probably the most important innovation is we have surveyed 100,000 current US students. So we've got our own student engagement survey, which is a phenomenally rich resource helping us understand exactly how much colleges and universities in America are stretching their students, challenging them, engaging them. And we're mixing that with a whole load of data around graduate outcomes, graduation rates, debt repayment, salaries, and other elements around the teaching environment and the diversity on campus. And I think it's a really exciting development. It's for the US at the moment, but we're very keen that we see this model, this teaching-focused model, wheeled out globally. So we may find, alongside the world rankings, which are the research-intensive global universities, we are able to provide data on teaching excellence on a much, much wider range of institutions.
A hot topic at the moment, of course, particularly in the UK. That's all for this THE World University Rankings podcast special. I should flag up that the results of the 2016-17 THE World University Rankings will no doubt be being discussed at our World Academic Summit, which is taking place at the University of California, Berkeley this year. Just pop THE World Academic Summit into Google. Other search engines are, of course, available. That's all for this podcast, though. If you do want to comment on anything we've discussed or any of the rankings results, you can find us online at timeshighereducation.com. You can also find us on Twitter at THE World Uni Rank. And indeed on LinkedIn and Facebook too. Just pop our name into the search bar. But that's all for this THE podcast special on the 2017 World University Rankings.
You're listening to a Times Higher Education podcast.